All right, I have the recorder started. And now I'm going to NTI. And it looks like we are ready to start NTI Luke chapter 7, which in my Kindle is on page 139. Oh, do you need a book, Roger?
I do.
You're on 140. Okay, so we did separate a little bit here in the page numbering. Let's see. All right, so starting with verses 1 to 10. Now, this is the story of the centurion. A centurion, for those of you who don't know, would be a Roman soldier, but a leader. And everybody knows that Israel was occupied by Rome at the time, right? You know, in the eyes of the average Jewish person, this guy was kind of the enemy. But he went to Jesus, and he told Jesus that he had a servant. And, you know, the servant may have been Jewish. Who knows? It doesn't really say. But he told Jesus that he had a servant who was very ill, and he asked Jesus to heal the servant. And Jesus was like, yes, you know, I'll come with you. And then he said, no, you know, don't come with me. And he says, you know, I'm a leader of many men, and I know that if I tell them to do something, they will. And he says, I know that if you say that my servant will be healed, my servant will be healed. And so Jesus said something. I don't remember exactly what. Let it be. I don't know what he said. But anyway, then the centurion started home. Before he even got home, two of his soldiers or servants came to meet him and let him know that the man was healed spontaneously. In fact, I think in one of the Gospels, the timing was even checked, and the man was actually healed at the same time that Jesus said, whatever he said, let it be. But in the Gospel, when the centurion tells Jesus, no, don't come to my house, what he really says is, he says, I'm not worthy to have you come to my house. Now, one thing that's important to maybe know if you don't know a little bit about Jewish tradition is that the Jewish tradition was that they would become defiled if they went into a home of a Gentile, a non-Jewish person. And so this centurion knew that, right? He knew that, and he was only being respectful to the tradition when he said, I'm not worthy. I don't think it really came from a sense of unworthiness. He was just obeying the tradition. I'm not worthy for you to come to my house. I'm a Gentile. You know, just do it, and I trust you. But Jesus thought he had great, great faith. You know, great faith to say, whatever, you know, if you say it, I know it will be done. So that's the story that we're about to see interpreted here. Listen to me in trust and faith, for all that I share is important to your healing. You must practice what I share with you. You must remember my words and treasure them within your mind. Ask me for more, and they will be given you. Have faith that you are worthy, and you will hear. For it is my will that you hear my voice. Now, so you can see right there, if you think of this story of the centurion, you know, really, Holy Spirit is using the symbol of this man who just had so much faith. You know, just say it and it will be done, right? I know that it will be done. And Spirit is asking us to really have that same faith and to see ourselves as worthy. Because it's funny, even though the centurion said, I'm not worthy, he actually knew that he was, right? He was just going with tradition. So Spirit is asking us to know that we are worthy of Spirit's guidance, and to trust that it will be done with the same trust or the same faith that the centurion had. Spirit continues, when my will meets your desire and the quietness of your mind, it shall be done and you will hear. And of course, an interesting part of that is he does say it needs to meet your desire. You have to have the desire to hear Spirit. If you don't want to hear Spirit, you won't. But also the quietness of your mind, which really means that somehow, at least temporarily, not permanently, you need to not listen to ego is what that really means. Somehow you need to not listen to ego. If you're sitting there, if you have some hate story about somebody that you're in a conflict with, and you're just thinking about the hate, there's no way clarity is going to come in to show you what you need to see. So you have to be willing to put that hate story aside somehow. And for me, the process I always used was journaling. That's what worked for me. It may not work for everyone, but it worked for me. And the way that I would do it is I would actually start off, in fact, in Luke 6, Holy Spirit tells us to share our interpretation with him. So if I had a hate story about somebody, I would start off by sharing the hate story. I mean, I would say exactly what I thought. And I remember even digging deep for the actual word that best described my emotion. I wasn't nice coloring it at all. Like, I remember with one person, I said something like, he disgusts me. Because disgust was just the best word to describe how I felt. But I, you know, obviously wasn't gossiping with Spirit, or I wasn't trying to get Spirit to agree with me. I was just getting it out on paper. And I would write until I reached, there's a point where you're just done. I mean, you've said everything you have to say about this. And that's when the quietness of your mind is there, because you've dumped it all out, right? And then your mind can become quiet, and then Spirit can come in and give you another point of view. Does anybody, briefly so that I can repeat it here, no long stories, but does anybody have a practice other than journaling that works for them that we should bring up? No?
Sometimes I'll just verbally talk.
Okay.
So whisper and just share that feeling.
Okay, so Dave is saying that he can verbally talk to the Holy Spirit and just share those feelings. Yes, to get them out. Yeah. All right, so the next paragraph. This is what is symbolized in the story of the centurion whose servant was healed. He did not doubt that he was worthy to receive of me. He did not doubt that his servant was worthy. The doubt that is written into the story was added by others who did not know their worth or the worth of others. But the centurion did know. And so, his desire and the quiet faith of his mind joined with the knowledge in mine, and as one will, without separation, what was asked was given. Ask for the healing of your mind by asking that my thoughts be placed there. As you seek, you shall find. You cannot fail to find that which you seek in honesty of faith. So one thing that I find interesting about this paragraph is, again, he says, ask for the healing of your mind by asking that my thoughts be placed there. So again, somehow we need to become, you know, quiet long enough. You know, it doesn't have to be a half hour of stillness, at least in my experience, a few instants of stillness and the clarity starts coming. So we have to be still long enough that we can get that other thought system, which we call the Holy Spirit thought system, to appear in our mind and start sharing with us a perspective that is different from the ego perspective we were holding on to before. Let's go on to 11 to 17. There is no death, but within you there is a deep slumber that resembles death, for it is unaware of truth or of life. It looks like an I is missing in the Kindle here. I'll just put it in. I have come to awaken you. I assume that's what it says. I have come to awaken you from this slumber and to resurrect you from this death. Yet each one is dead by his own choice. So each one must choose to answer my call to resurrection. I am calling you now. My hand is outstretched to assist you as you rise. What is your choice? Are you ready to awaken to life? Just recently, I heard some master, or probably since I'm not listening to, I guess I probably read it in the Seven Steps, because I'm not listening to any teachers this year and I'm not reading any other books, so I must have got it from the Seven Steps. But one of the masters in the Seven Steps said that the idea was that, you know, you may say that you are ready, right? But actually, that's only willingness. That's not readiness. Because if you were ready, you would awaken. All right? So that's so it's actually just willingness. And the idea was that readiness is a complete being done with ego. A complete being done with ego. So what we can start to look at then, if we want to use our willingness to become ready, because obviously we still need to become ready, is we can start noticing, where am I truly not ready? Where am I truly holding on to ego? You know, for example, which opinions are still really important to me, right? Which stories do I really still believe? Which things in the world do I still really want? Where am I clinging to ego? And just start noticing those things, because these are the things that are blocking our readiness. You know, as what the Course in NTI calls the Son of God, right, as this free being that we are, the only thing that could keep us from awakening in our absolute pure freedom, the only thing that could keep us from awakening is that we don't want to. It has to be that way, or else we wouldn't be free. So we think we're ready, but that's just not complete self-honesty. And, you know, again, you have to learn to look at yourself without judgment. It never, ever, ever helps to judge yourself. But if you start looking with some honesty, you might start noticing, ah, it's true, I'm not quite done with this. Ah, it's true, I'm really holding on to an opinion here. And the thought of letting go of it right now just kind of, it'd be like ripping my guts out. And you just start noticing, it's true, I'm not ready. But then what you do with that is you start giving the willingness to be ready. You say, you know what, I can see I'm holding on to this pretty tight, but I'm willing for this to be loosened. And so you could kind of think of it as your willingness is like the grease that you put on the things that are really tight so that they could start coming loose. Maybe they're knots tied with some kind of a plastic rope. Imagine all these knots tied with a plastic rope, right? But your willingness is greasing those knots. And as the grease gets in there, the plastic and the grease just starts coming undone. So our job, and the Course tells us this, our job is to seek for the obstacles, right? That's our job. We seek for the obstacles. We say, yes, I agree, that's an obstacle. Now I give my willingness for that to be undone. And the opposite of that would be, of course, just repeating the same old habits. So when the opportunity comes up to argue that point of view again, you argue that point of view again, right? You just keep repeating the same old habits. So we kind of have two choices here, and one prepares us for awakening and the other one doesn't. One is to continue the same old habits. Every time a similar situation comes up, act the way we always have. The other one is to notice it. Notice how strong the pull is. Notice how much we want to do it, but give our willingness for it to be undone. We may not even have what feels like the power now to resist whatever, you know. You know, I don't yell at Jasmine anymore, but I used to be a very good yeller. I used to yell at that little girl like you wouldn't believe. Now it's kind of funny because I can't even imagine taking on that tone. But when I first really realized that I didn't want to do that anymore, I still did it. It was just so automatic. And so then the way that worked is I would scream at her for something. And then I would notice that I had screamed at her, and I would give my willingness for that to be healed. I also had a lot of guilt, so I had to give my willingness for the guilt to be healed. The second stage that seemed to come in this process, and by the way, this process was over a few years, not overnight. The second stage that seemed to come in that process, I still yelled at her. I still wasn't able to stop that. But somehow I was able to start seeing it without guilt. And I think that once I was able to see it without guilt, I could actually put more willingness grease on it, right? The next stage that started to happen is I would see the annoyed thought in my mind, you know, like, you don't respect me, was a common one, believe it or not. I would see it in my mind before it came out of the mouth, and I was able to stop it. before it came out. And then the next step that happened in that process is those thoughts just started losing their oomph. And in fact, it would finally get to where a thought might come up like, you don't respect me, and I would just giggle at it. And then eventually, those thoughts stopped completely. So it was like a 5-year process, because these were very tight knots, right? 3 to 5, I don't know exactly, I mean, I didn't chart it, but it was probably 5 before it was completely done. A 5-year process, but by continually giving my willingness, it happened, you know? And when you look back on something like that, you know, it seems like it was really worth it, you know? I mean, in 5 years to learn not to scream, you know, at my daughter, it's a pretty cool thing. To be very patient with her, to love her as she is, to let her be who she is, that's a pretty cool thing.
And that transfers, I imagine.
That transfers to everything. Those skills, you just keep applying. So as a new obstacle comes up, it's the same skill set, right? It transfers to everything. It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, uptight about what's happening in the news, you know, a couple relationship, fear about something. Every time you notice the fear coming up, you give your willingness for that to be undone. What you want to do is be as consistent as you can about applying the grease, you know? Whether it's after you performed the habitual act, in the process of performing the habitual act, or before performing the habitual act, it all works. So you could do it like after, like, oh, I see what I did there, I give my willingness. During, I see what I'm doing, I give my willingness. Or when it's about to happen, I see what I want to do, I give my willingness. It's all good. All right, so again, he's telling us that we're dead by our own choice, you know, because we're listening to that ego. But he's offering us the resurrection. He's holding his hand out to us, and he's asking us if we're ready. So let's see, 18 to 23 then. There are expectations in your mind regarding truth, but these expectations are based on what you know within your slumber. They are not based on knowledge or life. They are based on interpretation or death. What do you expect of me? Where is it that you think I am leading you to? Free yourself from these thoughts and open your mind to me, unfettered by expectations. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me. Now, I wish I remembered what I expected from Spirit and what I expected awakening to be when I was here. I don't remember. But there are all kinds of ideas that people can have. For instance, I have heard people say things like, you know, when they awaken, the body will always be healthy, or when they awaken, everyone will like them. When they awaken, they will have all of the money, you know, they'll never have money troubles again. You know, just there's all kinds of imagination things that we have about awakening. And the truth is, there's just no way we can imagine it. It's impossible. It's a perspective that is so completely different than the perspective that we have now that we can't imagine it. And what Spirit is telling us here is that some of our obstacles to awakening are what we expect awakening to be. That's some of the obstacles. That's some of what keeps us from being ready, is just what we want it to be. And so he's asking us to let go of our expectations. Realize we, for some reason, we want it, but we don't have a clue what we're asking for. Yeah, we don't know. And the only way to know is to just keep going and find out. I haven't heard anybody that seems to be awakened complain.
We don't like this. We
want to
go back.
I'll tell you, one person who gives me a real clear view that that awakening is completely different from our experience is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. For me, he speaks about it, about the radically different perspective, better than anybody else I've ever read. When you read him, you know that he is, whew, seeing differently. You know, he's just, it's not at all. You can't even imagine it, and you know you can't imagine it. So, but again, what Spirit is telling us here is that our own imagination about what awakening is one of our obstacles, and he's asking us to be willing to let those things go. Realize we don't know. You know, a little symbol that just came to my mind is we probably know what awakening is about as much as a 3-year-old knows what it means to be an adult. They just don't know. You know, they can play house and pretend to be an adult, but they don't have any idea what being an adult is. They just can't. Right? So. Okay, verses 24 to 28. Why did you begin this search? What is it that you wanted to find? Did you really expect to find the peace of God in your way? No. You expected surrender. This was the expectation given you by me. That is why this expectation crossed your mind in peace with willingness. Now, I don't know if everyone expected surrender. Did you guys, when you started this path, expect to surrender? I don't know. Some of you?
Not so extreme.
Not so extreme. Yes, if for me, and so here I think he's very personally talking to me, because this was the first real thought that crossed my mind. You know, some of you have probably heard the story, but I was on a Disney cruise, and I was going to start the course for the first time, and I got down on my knees to say a prayer, almost out of ritual. And then while I was in the prayer, it came down over me, this desire to completely surrender the rest of my life. And I perceived that as my first real thought, right? So I think he's really reminding me of that here. He's saying, you knew when you started, this was complete surrender of everything. That, and you know that, you know, you felt that thought and you gave your willingness to do it. So these ideas that now awakening is something else and that you're going to get to do this and you're going to make this happen, you know, where'd that come from? You know, that wasn't the thought I gave you. I gave you that surrender thought you felt on the Disney cruise, remember? So that's kind of what I'm being reminded of here. Yeah, but even though I may be, maybe not everyone had that as their first real thought, right? The surrender real thought is true for all of us. It's not like some of us are going to surrender and some of us aren't. In the end, we all have to surrender, right? That's the only way. That's the only way. You surrender completely. Holy Spirit continues, this path that you have chosen is the greatest of all paths within the world. Yet this path is within the world. To know the kingdom of heaven, you must be willing to step off of this path with me. So Spirit is acknowledging that the spiritual path is the path that, you know, most commonly brings people to awakening. Not everyone, by the way, is on a spiritual path when they awaken. But that's a very common path. So he's calling it the highest or the greatest of all paths in the world, but he's pointing out that it's still within the world. You know, we could spend lifetimes on the spiritual path. You've heard of the spiritual ego, right? That's when you fall in love with being on the spiritual path so much that awakening isn't even a possibility. You're as caught up in being spiritual as you were caught up in being whatever you were before. And Spirit is saying, you know, it's a great path, a spiritual path. I'm not knocking it, but you got to get off of that, because, you know, that's, you can just go right past me on that path. You know, you have to be willing to come out of the world, and out of the world includes off of the spiritual path. So at some point, for all of us, the guidance must come to stop reading the books, to stop chasing the teachers, to stop buying the crystals, you know, whatever we do. There's got to be an end to that. Because if you guys look at how many books and teachers and crystals there are, you realize you could do it for this entire lifetime and not even scratch the surface, right? So imagine how many lifetimes you could spend trying to do all of that stuff. So there's, in that way, there's nothing. In fact, in Revelation, it points out that there's nothing special about the spiritual path. that the spiritual path is just like any other life choice. It can be used to awaken you, but it can also be used to keep you sleeping. There's nothing special about it. 29 to 35. In honesty, look at your expectations and at what you want. Remember, this whole chapter is helping us to look at our obstacles that are keeping us from being ready, right? In honesty, look at your expectations and at what you want. Were your expectations given to you by me? Was that a real thought that came as a realization? If they were not, then they are not of me, and you will not know me if you judge me by them. So again, he's just asking us to discern between our human thoughts that may have a spiritual tone. You know, like some of the things that could be very easy to fall for me if I wanted to. The idea of being a spiritual teacher. The idea of becoming popular as a spiritual teacher. The idea of selling books. You know, all of those ideas, they sound spiritual, kind of. Not to me, actually. But to some people, they do. You know, they think it's great to be this spiritual teacher with lots of followers. And, you know, that becomes the thing. I want that. But guess what? If you're wanting that, you just walked away from wanting awakening. You can't want that and want awakening too. So he's asking us to look at what is it that we want, and was that guided from him, or is that something we cooked up? And if we cooked it up, are we willing to, or give, willing to let it go now, or give our willingness to be willing to let it go at some other point if it's too tight of a knot right now? Just start throwing some grease on it. Right? Okay, our last paragraph, 36 to 50. Your surrender is forgiveness. To the measure that you surrender to me, that is the measure that your thoughts, which are not of me, are forgiven. For when you are accepting my thoughts and doing my will, with recognition that they are your thoughts and your will, you are not living as a separate entity. You are being one will with me, and this is forgiveness, which is where your love comes from. For you can only know love when you accept love and join with the will of love. But to join with a will that is not love is to choose to be separate from love. That is to choose to remain asleep and to say no to the offer of resurrection, which is an offer extended to you now. So sometimes when people think about surrender and think about God's will, they think about big things like, you know, riding in TI, you know, or something like that. And those things happen. I mean, those things happen. But true surrender is on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis. True surrender is knowing when to say nothing out of complete willingness, not forcing yourself to say nothing, but out of complete willingness to say, you know, what I was about to say was pure ego and I just don't want to do that. And to say nothing. To, you know, not respond to the email. To, you know, smile at someone. You know, I mean, I can't think. You know, accept a situation as it is a good one. You know, be patient with yourself. You know, allow yourself to feel this fear, but let those stories rest in the mind. All of these little everyday, throughout the day, moment by moment tips on how to be, which you mentioned this last time, that most of your guidance is how to be. That's what most guidance is. How to be while whatever's going on is going on. There's also guidance about doing. But the most significant guidance is how to be. So in the eyes of the world, it's little stuff, you know. But actually, those little things are what add up to ego disappearing and awakening happening. And so that's why we have to surrender. We're either going off with our ego, following our old habits, or we're listening to, they call it another voice, but it's often a voiceless intuition, just an inner knowing. This is, you know, I shouldn't say this. And how many times have you thought, I shouldn't say this, and said it anyway? right? Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? This is not, it's listening to the, I shouldn't say this. It's doing that instead. Yeah, we all, I think we've all done it. Yeah, it's learning to listen to that voice. That, you know, you can't even call it a voice. That intuition, that knowing, that's what we're calling Holy Spirit here. And surrendering is tuning into it and doing what it asks, no matter how much your ego kicks and screams. But I want to tell him. I want to tell him. I'm not gonna. That's surrender. And at first it can be difficult, as you know, but with practice it becomes easier. In fact, today I was on a phone call for the ordination class that I'm in. I have a daily phone call. And today I was on a phone call about, the lady I was talking to told me that she saw that scientists have discovered in the brain that there are grooves in the brain that are, I guess, caused by habitual thoughts. And when she said that, what that made me think about was like water, like especially here in the desert, you can see where the water runs when it rains. It may be dry most of the time, but you can tell that when it rains and it starts flooding, the water's going to go down that ditch, right? And if for some reason you don't want the water to go that way, like it's heading straight for your house, you have to, you know, go to a lot of trouble to get that water to go another way. You have to build something, right, and to get the water to move in a different way. Well, that's kind of what's happening. We have these habitual habits, and the water just always runs that way. Every time somebody says this, I react this way. And so it takes a bit of effort, like you're building a little dam or something to get the water going a different way. It takes a little effort at first to get it going the other way. But once you build that obstacle so that the water starts flowing a different way, after a while, what happens? There's a new groove, right? And then the water just starts going down that groove. So we have to put up with the effort in the beginning for the change of habit. The change of habit from just going with ego to restraining ourselves and listening to spirit. And if you've ever seen Bam Bam Revolver, I had to say Bam Bam first. I couldn't think of the name. If you've ever seen Revolver, the end of the revolver, you saw how much effort he was putting into not listening to his ego, right? His ego's like, shoot him, you know? And instead he gets down on his knees and says, I'm sorry, I should respect you more, right? I love that scene because it shows that it can be very difficult because of our habits, but we can still do it, right? That's surrender, and that's what we're being asked to do. And you can see how you can't wake up without it, because otherwise you're just going off with ego again and again and again and again. So that is the end of chapter 7. So what I will do now is stop the recorder, and we'll go into a little bit of silence, and then we'll talk about it.